Its history, its impact. A ride down the Cumberland River today in the Upper Cumberland. 688 miles long, the Cumberland River begins in the Appalachian Mountains, finishes near Paducah, Kentucky. And all the while, the Cumberland River has a large impact on the Upper Cumberland. Especially we've seen that in the month of May with a lot of rain. The role of the Cumberland River in our lives, as we talk with Ashley Webster and Stone Fagan, both park rangers with the Army Corps of Engineers. Ashley, sometimes I think that the Cumberland River gets lost when we think about the Upper Cumberland because we have such beautiful lakes here. But how important is the Cumberland to this part of the world?
So in Tennessee, it plays a huge role. So I'm with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and you mentioned the lakes in the area. So those lakes play a huge role with the Cumberland River. So with the Cumberland River itself, the Army Corps of Engineers lakes that we manage either are on the Cumberland River or feed into the Cumberland River. So for example, one that is on the Cumberland would be Cordell Hall or Old Hickory. The other ones that are tributaries to the Cumberland River would be Center Hill and Dale Hollow Lake.
Stone, when you think about the role of the Cumberland River, how do you size up its impact on this region?
So I would say that most of the impact comes from trade. So we have locks and dams, and those locks create a huge boon for freight and trade to pass through. In addition, the dams produce hydropower, which serves the surrounding communities.
You know, the whole transportation part of the story is so interesting. When you think back of the history, for example, of Granville, which is one of the treasures of our region. But that was a big community at one point because of the river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. We actually worked with them doing a history display. They got a grant. And with that, they focused on essentially the fall of Granville, but then also the upbringing of Granville, of bringing it into a tourism standpoint versus an industrial standpoint. Here at Cordell Hall, where we're stationed at, we actually have a lock for commercial traffic. That was why it was put in the late 60s, early 70s. It was operational. But yeah, it is interesting that the impact that we played on communities, but yet how they decided to use that impact.
We don't think of rivers, I think, as much anymore. Maybe the Mississippi, obviously, but is the Cumberland River still important for transporting goods?
Yeah, at Old Hickory Lock, which is downstream of Cordell Hall, Cheatham, Lake Barkley, it's extremely viable being able to have that trade through the navigable locks. In comparison, it is cheaper and more efficient to move commerce that way, whether that's gravel, agriculture supplies, sand, oil. It's a lot cheaper to do it that way, that route, than on a tractor trailer, so to speak, by land.
That's interesting. We're visiting with Stone Fagan and Ashley Webster. They are both park rangers with the Corps of Engineers as we talk about the role of the Cumberland River. Stone Fagan and Ashley Webster are our guests. You guys have thrown out a couple of terms, so help me back because it's been a long time since middle school. So locks and dams. What is, Stone, first of all, a lock? What do we mean when we use that term?
So a lock is a structure where the tailwater and headwater of two different lakes converge, and one side of the lock is going to be at a higher elevation. The other side of the lock is going to be at a lower elevation. So, for instance, a vessel coming in from the higher elevation side could drive into the lock. The water would then be lowered to the elevation at the lower side, and then it could go on its way, and vice versa, from lower to higher elevation as well.
When I do dam tours, we do dam tours. We like to call it kind of
those
like
dam tours.
Those dam tours are great.
You never hear that, do you?
Never.
That was brand new.
It was fresh. we like to describe a lock as a water elevator, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And do we have locks on the Cumberland River?
We do. Cordell Hall, Old Hickory, Cheatham, and Lake Barkley all have locks. So, and all those except for Cordell Hall do have a heavy commerce usage. Actually, out at next to Lake Barkley, an area that many of y'all have probably heard of, Land Between the Lakes, that's where we have the Kentucky Lake, and they're actually expanding off to the side a secondary lock in order to be able to keep up with the lockages. Barges are having to sit for hours, half a day plus at a time, because of the current lock at Kentucky Lock is restricted to its sizes and how many tenders you can get through there and barges. So that project is still underway. It started in the early 90s with moving utilities and things like that. They do have a foreseeable timeline of the completion. But that is an exciting thing for our barge operators, our commerce, is just the amount of time that's going to be saved instead of having to wait.
Can you see the lock at Cordell Hall? I mean, can you stand at a picnic area or somewhere and actually see it in operation?
Yes, you can.
That's interesting. I bet people didn't realize that it was there. Actually, a lot of people interested to see that.
Yeah, we get a lot of visitation at both of our tailwater areas. I think Stone can kind of explain how to get to both areas to view the lock.
So the dam side.
So two of the main areas below the lock, if you wanted to see the downstream side, The first one would be on the dam side. That is accessible through Carthage on Turkey Creek Highway. The actual lock side, you can get to the tailwater side as well as the upstream side, the lake side. You would go through Elmwood and then down Horseshoe Bend. So the public is able to go to those two recreation areas and view it from upstream and downstream. Currently on the dam side, we are under bluff construction. So they are currently scaling back the bluff, so that area is closed to the public through the end of May. But typically, yes, we do get a lot of visitation. What's really unique for us to mention is last year was our 50th anniversary, and we actually have the dam and the locks right there. We have the dam lit up in red, white, and blue right now. And I know the power plant superintendent is very passionate about keeping that going. So it's quite the sight to see at night.
And a great way to show your kids something that they may not get to see all the time and understand, you know, more famous locks even in other parts of the world, that at least right here in your backyard you can see what one is and how it works. All right, so we're talking about locks. So now, Ashley, you get to give us the definition. I think we understand dams, but we may not understand completely why we put dams in place.
So the main reason the Corps of Engineers across the nation looked at putting in dams is the fact that every spring we had uncontrollable spring flooding, high water events. So with that, the Corps of Engineers meticulously is able to oversee the inflow and outflow of our waterway systems and tributaries all the way down to the Mississippi. The Cumberland River ties in. Many a times when you're watching the Weather Channel, they'll reference Cairo. That's a very important sector on the river system because at that point you have three major rivers coming together downstream towards Lake Barkley, towards Kentucky Lake. You have the Tennessee River, the Cumberland River, and then the Ohio River all converging within a few miles. So it plays a huge role to be able to maintain water levels and try to mitigate any flooding impacts.
Was flood control kind of the first thing and then power from that the second thing?
It was. All of our dam constructions, at least in the Nashville District, were based off of two flood control acts. So that was the basis of this. So we do have different types of dams in our district. One would be a low head dam. Those are the ones that you see the locks, And then the others would be High Head Dams. Those would be like Center Hill, Dale Hollow, J. Percy Priest. So the High Head Dams, they were designed to accommodate storage. We were designed to help with that, but also, as mentioned, the navigation and then hydropower, like Stone mentioned.
Stone, when the aftermath, I guess, of that, or the after effect, is the amazing lakes that are created that provide such a recreational opportunity for the region.
Absolutely. So Quartel Hole, for instance, provides an abundance of recreational opportunities, including campgrounds, trails, playgrounds, picnic sites, fishing docks, boat ramps, swimming beaches, and marinas. We experience about 1 million visitors annually and almost $60 million in visitor spending within 30 miles radius of the project. The project also encourages over 400 jobs to be supplied, and recreation increases visitor motivation to learn more about the environment, understanding and awareness of environmental issues, and sensitivity to the environment.
Ashley, it's hard for us, especially as we get further and further away from these dams being constructed, to really understand what an impact an uncontrolled river could have had on life throughout our region here.
Huge impact. We do supply a annual or biannual update of how much monetary value we have saved for flood control, especially come spring. So we play a huge role. But for anyone who just wants to try to wrap their mind around what we do, how we do it, the two best things I can suggest is come on a dam tour. That would feature the dam, and then here at Quartel Hole, it would feature the lock as well. And then you can also lock through the lock within a 48-hour notice for free. So both of those, the dam tours and locking through the lock, are free of charge to the public. It's a great opportunity to just pretty much get your boots on the ground and see what we do and how we do it. We have great staff up at the dams and locks who specialize in that. They can answer and understand how the infrastructure works. It's completely beyond me, but it's impressive the amount of skills these men and women have to keep our infrastructure going.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I'm sitting here thinking that I guess we all did get a little bit of an education with what happened in Nashville back in 2010, 2011. With the flooding there. And what stood out to me about that was you really do begin to understand that this is a system, that what's happening in Kentucky is having an impact on what's happening in Nashville, for example, in that flooding event. And as you mentioned, the Mississippi, what's happening in these different places, it's all running together, I guess.
It's all like a big spider web. And that's how our electrical grid is as well, is it's just a big spider web. So, you know, we control the electrical grid as well as essentially the water grid.
And so you have men and women who are making these decisions about should we increase the water that's let out of the dam and those sorts of things. That's, I guess you would get to see some of that on a dam tour.
Yes, you would. You would interact with some of our mechanics, electricians, our superintendent, our operators who are in the control room. And then outside of that immediate office at the powerhouse and locks, we have a hydrology and hydraulics department in our district office in Nashville, and they're communicating with SEPA and TVA and all the other river systems. So and on top of that, not only are they juggling inflow and outflow, they're also juggling water temperatures, oxygen levels, dissolved oxygen, upstream and downstream. So it is beyond me.
Yeah. Truly fascinating. We continue our visit with Stone Fagan and Ashley Webster. They are park rangers with the Corps of Engineers as we roll on talking about the Cumberland River. The Cumberland River is such a part of our resource here in the Upper Cumberland, across the entire state of Tennessee. Stone Fagan, Ashley Webster are our guests. It has produced an amazing lake. It has produced amazing recreational facilities as well. Stone, beautiful campgrounds that I'm sure are used just beyond what we can imagine every year around Quartel Hole.
Absolutely. So we've got two campgrounds, 155 sites at one and 150 sites at the other. They are defeated in Salt Lick Creek campgrounds. First, defeated, located in Smith County, Tennessee, situated northeast of Carthage along Defeated Creek. The origin of the name goes back to John Payton, who was in a surveying party. He was attacked by a group of Cherokees led by Hanging Maw in the 18th century and was defeated, and thus the name was given Defeated Creek. It was originally named Montrose and was changed to Defeated in 1880. And then just a couple facts about Defeated. Again, it's on Cordell Hole Lake. It features boat docks and ramps, campsites and recreational facilities, and is a number 5 USAIS campground regarding...
It would be regarding our monetary bring-ins in comparison. And I'm sure visitation.
But, I mean, that's impressive when you think about all the campgrounds around the nation.
It is. And last year as a whole, Cordell Hole was just a little shy of breaking $1 million. So I'm pretty proud of saying we're very heavy in recreation. And what's interesting is a lot of these older projects, we're a newer project that was impounded in 73. A lot of the older projects, recreation was a forethought. It wasn't really focused on, and with Cordell Hole itself, recreation was one of the reasons it was authorized. So I'm pretty proud to say we're heavy with the land-based recreation. Go ahead and talk about Salt Lick.
Okay. Just a little more on where the origins of all of these recreational areas got their names. So the Cumberland River was actually named by the French in the 1670s. Dr. Thomas Walker renamed it Cumberland for William Augustus, Duke of Cumberland, in the mid-1700s. So Stone's River was named after Uriah Stone. The Obey River was named after Obadiah Spencer. And these are all historical figures. And then just a little bit about Salt Lick. Salt Lick Creek was named for the mineral deposits found nearby. And the Cumberland River was named after the Shawnee. That's the Native American tribe that was there originally. And then they were competing for territory with the Cherokees, and the Cherokees eventually took hold of the area.
Ashley, how diverse is the area around these campgrounds in terms of fauna, in terms of wildlife, in terms of things that people enjoy seeing when they're out in nature?
So we're very heavy in the flora and fauna. If you hike, we recommend coming out on our trails, especially late spring this time of year. We've got tons of wildflowers from phlox to...
fire pink.
From... what do we have?
Endangered short splatter pod.
So we have a variety of items on our trails, from phlox to... short splatter pod to cardinal flowers to periwinkles. So definitely get out, hike. But actually, within the campgrounds, Defeated is known for the deer population. We are actually celebrating Defeated's 50th anniversary of the campground. And with that, our friends group has a limited edition mug, and on that mug, we're featuring a deer on it. So people come from all over the surrounding counties just to see the number of deer. Come sunset, you could see 50, 60-plus deer on any given evening. And then Salt Lick, we see deer, turkey. Salt Lick itself is pretty heavy on the cedar trees, just where the depth of soil to rock. So it just varies. And then our other rec areas... they're a lot more open, and what's interesting about those, we have agriculture fields. So people actually cut the tall grass for hay. So not exactly flora fauna, but I think that's unique to say some of our rec areas are being utilized by the locals.
How healthy is the Cumberland River as a river?
As a river, it's extremely healthy. Like I mentioned previously, our water managers are looking at dissolved oxygen levels. The Corps, as well as the state, implements regulations for erosion control, pollution control. And our water management crew comes out and tests certain locations and stations on all of our lakes, as well as downstream or upstream, to monitor any sort of pollutants such as that. So overall, it's a healthy river, and I believe a lot of that is because it is regulated.
As we wrap up our conversation with Ashley Webster and Stone Fagan, what's your favorite part of the areas that you get to work in every single day, your office, so to speak? No, what lights your fancy?
I would say getting out on the trails, doing trail maintenance, making sure that they're marked well so visitors won't get lost, that there's no obstructions to the trail, trees and stuff like that, and just immersing myself in nature with my teammates. And
how about you, Ashley?
I enjoy working in the campgrounds as well as the day use areas. People come to us for vacation. You know, me and Stone, we do campground talks throughout the summer, water safety programs, environmental programs. We have campers come up and thank us for doing this. And I feel like we're making a difference. Not only are we presenting a program and hopefully teaching them some items, but the fact that they came to our parks, came to our lakes, that us, the rangers, and our facility management staff maintain for them means a lot to me. It really does, because I feel like we're making memories for them one way or another.
Is it hard in your jobs to not spend all day taking selfies of things that you see and wildlife and flowers and all that type of thing?
We don't take too many selfies.
I guess you see it all the time, right? You just...
But we do take a lot of pictures. We're both guilty. As soon as we get on a trail or see a salamander or a unique trillium or plant of some sort, or just a view out on the lake while we're doing boat patrol, we'll pull out the cell phones and take some pictures. We both manage our Facebook page, so literally we get paid to take pictures and let people live through our social media account who don't get to work in this environment.
It's amazing work, and we thank you both for doing it so that we all can enjoy it. Ashley Webster, Stone Fagan, they are park rangers with the Corps of Engineers as we talk about the role of the Cumberland River. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.